In 1985, screenwriter Tom Shulman wrote a spec script inspired by his own English teacher. His agent said he loved it, but refused to even try and sell it, saying no one would want a film set in a 1950s all-boys school with the three worst possible words I can think of in a title. Direct quote. We're talking, of course, about Dead Poets Society.
I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane. And welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. How you doing, bud?
Yeah, I'm all right, man.
You living? Living the dream?
Living. Chest's weird. I'm out of pain meds. I haven't slept in a while. So everything's a bit weird.
How was the morphine withdrawal?
It was intense for a day.
Okay.
And then now it just hurts all the time. Also, I feel like the pain meds that they put me on for my lung took out loads of other like weird aches and pains and shit, which makes sense.
Yeah, because of course.
The painkillers, they're not going to be sort of like, this boy's lung needs work.
It's a switch, not a fader, yeah.
Yeah, so that's good. The first couple of days without the meds, it was just sort of like, oh my God, my back feels like I've been punched by a small car. And when did my knees get so brittle? Why are my feet feeling like I've walked a marathon? And I'm like, oh, painkillers.
It's age.
I've not felt anything.
Yeah.
In like 2 weeks. And then it all got turned back on at once. So that was mint. Yeah. All hit about 10 p.m. Sick. But yeah, I'm back at work. I'm doing all right.
Nice.
All right. How are you?
Good. I went to go see Tron Ares.
And?
Awful.
Yeah.
Good soundtrack.
Sure.
Not good enough.
Yeah.
Not good enough. Like, it's a really boilerplate script, which is fine.
Yeah.
But with good performances and better direction,
right,
it would have worked. But it really fundamentally doesn't.
I really struggle with Tron, like I always have.
Yeah.
It's the perfect B movie. It's the perfect big budget B movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, give me a better premise.
Right.
For a big budget B movie.
Man gets sucked into computer.
Why do they keep trying to do this fucking like over the top arty Godzilla got money now type movie? And I get it. I do understand it.
Yeah.
Because it's the whole fucking like ring it till it's dry type shit. And I know that we're in that thing now. Franchise didn't look at Marvel.
Mm.
Fucking hell.
Right.
I feel like that's been wrung out and is trying to mop itself back up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Talking about flogging a dead horse, you're hitting floor right now. Should we get into what we're doing today?
What are we doing today?
Well, we're gonna get into why I don't think we'll ever see eye to eye on this movie.
Okay, well then we're gonna get into the burning sets of a man's dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The least famous Hollywood director.
And finally, what's it all mean?
What does it all mean?
What's it really mean?
What does it all mean? We'll tell you, don't worry about it. But before we do, some of you haven't seen this film in ages and you just need a bit of a refresher. Some of you have never seen it and are never planning to. So we're going to tell everybody exactly what happens in this film. Just a quick little 1 minute, little breakdown, little plot breakdown before we inevitably have an emotional breakdown. So I've written it this week. Ben, do you want to kick us off?
At an all-boys school in 50s America, a new English teacher arrives to commit educational crimes like caring about the students and fueling interest in the arts.
Bastard.
How dare he? He encourages kids to rip out technical pages from their poetry books, stand on desks, and generally behave like humans rather than machines. A group of friends find this wildly inspiring, mainly Neil, a golden boy with a father who schedules his son's breathing for him, and Todd, a basically mute lad who doesn't know he's into men yet.
I think that's a fair summation of our group of people.
Which one's Todd?
Ethan Hawke.
Doesn't know he's into men yet?
He'll get there.
What do you mean?
Todd's pre-closet. You can tell.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Pre-closet?
Pre-closet.
So then the next step would be in the closet,
yeah.
Right.
And then out of the closet, hopefully.
How sensitive is your detection equipment that you're pre-sensing?
I'm a pre-cog.
Right. I didn't get that from him at all.
Did you not?
I just thought he was a little sweetheart.
So we'll get into why we'll never see eye to eye to this movie.
I thought he was a little sweetheart.
The boys revive something called the Dead Poet Society, which mainly involves sneaking into a cave to read poetry and smoke like Victorian ghosts. Not shown, but definitely happening. Todd is likely getting his gay awakening.
Not shown being the key words there.
No child runs into the woods to read and calls it rebellion, right? You're going in to read Victorian poetry. Are you really?
Oh, no, I have a comeback for this.
Right, well,
I've got something for this.
Neil discovers that acting is his true passion, which unfortunately ranks just below ketamine on his dad's list of acceptable hobbies.
Mm.
Still, with Mr. Keating's encouragement, he joins a play and shines on stage, while Todd manages to evolve from terrified lamppost to talking lamppost.
Then comes the crash. Neil's dad finds out about the play, reacts like his son confessed to arson, and Neil, crushed by the pressure, takes his own life and the school immediately moves to blame Mr. Keating. He's fired, the boys are broken, and as he leaves, Todd leads a defiant desk-standing salute, a heartfelt moment of solidarity that sadly foreshadows Robin Williams' own climb onto furniture at the end of his own life. That started out really nice. Hate how that ended. I'm not going to lie.
I feel we were introduced to Robin
with
climbing on furniture, and he left us by climbing on furniture.
I was introduced to Robin when a fucking green ball was jumping about the room, or when he was a 10-year-old but looked like a 45-year-old.
Sorry, dramatic. So are you saying Robin Williams' suicide was one of his comedy performances?
No, I'm saying that's how I was introduced to him.
Okay, Jack.
It's in Jack. He buys porn at 10.
I don't think I have seen Jack.
Him and his mates getting shit-faced in like a treehouse.
No.
Reading Playboy.
No.
Gorgeous film.
Yeah.
Ages too quick.
He's always annoyed me slightly. His dramatic roles, brilliant. His comedy roles come across like a hyperactive kid whose mum's got mates around. And he's like, look at me. Ooh, I'm this guy. And you're like, your mother is going through some shit right now. Could you please just go on your Game Boy? And they're like, oh, I'm a genie. And it drives me wildly crazy.
Mate, we're going to have to do him world's best
interview.
Dad at some
him
point.
Him in an interview on panel shows
is
enough to make me pick up a knife. Because he will not let another guest get a word in edgeways. There'll be some artist.
They're not Robin Williams.
There'll be some artist who's this is their only time on television.
Right.
And they've written a great song and they've come on, and then Graham Norton will be like, so tell us about your song in your one and only opportunity. And he'll be like, look at me. And the artist gets in maybe three or four syllables.
Blame
and
the producer.
He's never seen again.
It's Robin Williams. Just don't book anyone else because that's fucking stupid.
So look. Dead Poets was a major success, right? It earned over $235 million worldwide on a pretty small budget. But more importantly, it was kind of one of the defining 80s movies.
Yeah.
Got an Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay. It was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
Robin Williams got nominated for Best Actor.
Shocking.
And Best Director. Its success kind of cemented his transition from comedian to serious actor.
Yeah.
But more importantly, kind of left a big mark on popular culture. Like Carpe Diem sees the day became a bit of a global slogan. Like I learned it when I was a kid and I didn't realize it came from this film. Like not originally,
but
like its popularity when we were kids was 100% related to this film.
Okay.
And the image of students standing on desks is kind of the collective memory of the 80s defiance.
Yeah. That I've always got memories of.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I didn't even really know why. I think I'd seen clips of it on television shows.
I think I'd always caught the end of it when it was on TV.
Right, and it kind of seemed like an emotionally powerful, like, smash the system.
Yeah.
When really it's just like, oh, my mate's dead.
Plus the way that this film starts, I can imagine child Ben going, oh, what's this?
Right.
And then immediately falling asleep.
Well, this is why I think we will never see eye to eye on this movie.
Okay.
Because I fucking hate these kids. I despise them. And here's why. I went to a school like this.
Yeah.
Devonport High Grammar School for Boys.
Yeah.
And my school was a moneyed, authoritarian, converted naval hospital.
Right.
It was founded in 1896 to feed the military.
So it's full of ghosts.
Full of ghosts
and full of
young, supple, unshot bodies. Which is just what the military needs. They need supple, unshot bodies to fill the ranks of the army and the navy.
Okay.
Which is what my school was. I checked Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Right. Most of the graduates listed on Wikipedia. Ambassadors, diplomats.
Right.
There's one admiral. And weirdly, the lead actor from Chariots of Fire.
Chariots of Fire.
The Olympic running. Do, 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 do.
Oh, right. Yeah. Do,
do, do, do. So having been to this school, I can tell you none of the kids were like that. And none of the kids displayed are like this at all.
Yeah.
Like the kids at my school would use, and the kids at this school, it's just family history or money or like current financial status used as a beating stick to bully you with. So, like, these kids wouldn't be friends. They would be bullying Neil because his father had a job and was therefore working class.
Yeah.
They'd be bullying Todd for being new or quiet or gay because he wrote a poem.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, 100%.
And this is, it's part of the reason when you call me posh, I get viscerally sad because it's you telling me that to you, I'm just like the kids that bullied me.
That's, okay, A, that's not what I'm saying. So don't ever take it that way.
I can't take it any other way.
Then that's a
but it is a me problem. Because in my head, you go posh and I go, oh, those kids at school who were like, where do you summer? the bin. And I'm like, yes, cunt.
But I know you, though. So if you were to say Barmouth, you would get absolutely shit on. But again, you being in a posh environment or being in, like, having a posh upbringing doesn't make you fucking, what's his name? Sean. Is it Sean? Robert Sean Leonard. There you go. It doesn't make you him. It doesn't make you, like, running around being sort of like, my dad won't let me be a thespian. You know what I mean? Like,
that wasn't me at all.
I know you.
I was the smelly goth kid that everyone was like, don't talk to him.
Yeah, we're just going to show you a magic trick. And no one wants to fucking see that. See, that's the guilty shit right there. This is what I mean. When I call you posh, I mean card tricks, close-up magic, know how to spell certain things that no one says anymore. You know what I mean? That's exactly where I'm coming from.
So yeah, no, I mean, I wasn't doing magic tricks, but I was intentionally the weird goth kid. I mean, your school was different because your school, you would have gone to the equivalent of the school that, my school had to finish half an hour later than the other school so that there weren't fights because we were the posh kids and that, well, inverted commas, posh kids. My school friends were.
I'd have done that the other way around. I'd have got the rolls in the car park early to get them gone so that they're not attacked by the kids who are in the shitty school.
I still got attacked by the kids in the shitty school.
Yeah, fair.
To get a tetanus shot because I got stabbed up with a compass.
Yeah, we weren't allowed compass at my school.
Because you'd attack the posh kids and each other.
Because everyone would attack everyone. It was just fair game. So my school was weird. My school was like one of these weird... I remember getting the letter saying that I hadn't got into the blazer school.
The one school
that needed a blazer to go to it. And on my first day of this school, like, it was the everyone that called it the bad school or the rough school, the one around the corner from my house. The rough school, my first day there is, I did like a little introduction to what my tutor, Miss Cochran, one of the most attractive women I've ever seen in my entire life. She hated kids.
Good.
And it was very apparent.
Nice.
And saying that out loud, it kind of speaks volumes
to
later life choices. Yeah.
Later life choices where like, I think this woman hates me and therefore I find her wildly attractive.
Therefore, I've already got an engagement ring.
Yeah. Perfect.
Mm. That is difficult. Okay, that's something I need to think about at some other point. It was at school. I did a little introduction. My name's Ben, and this, that, and the other, blah, 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 blah. And then just as an off-the-cuff comment, she said something vaguely rodent-like nose. And then from rodent-like nose came rat. From rat came weasel.
Is that where weasel comes from?
My nickname as a 36-year-old man comes from a tutor.
I never knew that.
Passing a completely off-the-cuff comment on my first day of my new secondary school, vaguely rodent-like.
Wow.
It was a good day at my school if there wasn't a stabbing.
Right.
It was a great week if there wasn't a bomb threat. If there was a bomb threat, because we got so used to them, we wouldn't go as far as we used to. We'd just go to the hall opposite the school now because it was like, it's not going to do fuck all. There's a few guys there. There's stories that I've told you in the past. One kid got locked in the science room over lunch as a detention. Wasn't allowed to go to the bathroom, ended up shitting in the science teacher's drawer, breaking a window, never coming back to that school. I bumped into him a few years later and was like,
What the fuck?
Yeah. We all thought you were dead.
You see, we had a few like knife incidents, but it was like someone brought one in. The bad one.
Right.
We had a weird kid. We had our Todd, right?
Did you?
Did your
school have a weird kid, Rob?
No, I had the ability to talk. This kid was, he was like 7 foot tall and about 3 inches wide. He was literally like Slender Man. It was horrifying.
Didn't need to talk.
And he would put his headphones on the bus.
Right.
And he would sing along to Michael Jackson at full volume.
Yeah, mint. Let him run.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But not well. Right. And I think nowadays we'd probably say autism. But at the time, freak.
Right. Oh, yeah, sure.
And he got really friendly with the food ed teacher.
Food ed?
Yeah,
What's food ed?
Teaching you how to cook. Today we're going to make a bread.
Fuck off. That's not a real lesson.
That's a real lesson.
So we had something similar. It was a choice of doing DT or home ec.
So we did home ec,
but home ec wasn't, it was like rough. And then you'd make a bolognese. It was rough for 4 months, and then you'd make a bolognese and go, what are we doing? Right. Like, I don't get what this class is.
Home ec was the... Sure. I got the name wrong.
No, you're good.
So he became like bonded with the home ec teacher.
Yeah.
The home ec teacher got fired because the police went round to a sixth former's party that was being too loud, and he was there and he'd made weed brownies for the sixth formers. So he got fired.
Were they all reading poetry?
This is it. This is it. They're all sniffing bread and going, oh, an excellent crumb.
Right.
So the weird kid didn't take well to this guy's firing.
Right.
Took a knife from the home ec thing and just went on a stabbing spree.
Okay.
And then we never saw him again.
Okay.
Hope he's all right.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's fine.
I mean, he's over 7 foot, so I'm sure he's doing
right,
fine.
Exactly. You know he's probably...
That's 30% of life sorted.
He's probably in some horror B movies as we speak.
Why not?
Covered in prosthetics.
Yeah, go crazy.
So we had different schools.
Yeah.
But I was always the poor kid at the posh school.
Yeah, and so I was always the poor kid at the poor school.
Right. So I watched this, and I think... I was watching this, and I was like, I wonder... If Ben's going to watch this and just go, I can't relate to this because this is nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching it going, I fucking hate this place. And I hate these kids.
I love this film.
Do you?
Yeah, this film's great. So the only reason that I love this film is it's not so much... The subject matter I struggle with because I don't have any
likewise
frame of reference to it.
Likewise, like, you know, I'm what I mean? Not a poetry guy.
Yeah, I'm not a poetry guy. I didn't go to posh school. I don't understand the ins and outs of old money
sort of
hand-me-down stuff. I don't have an overbearing dad. I don't have a dad. So there's lots that I can't really relate to on a personal level. But what I can relate to is a group of people in a certain situation finding their people, whether on purpose or not, finding their people and going, you know what? I'm going to make a go at this. And then what little you've got to give, you give 100% of. And then together, you all kind of weirdly form this little ragtag group of misfits doing something that you like.
Yeah.
I made all the wrong decisions in school. Like, all the wrong decisions.
Same.
I'd been playing drums since I was 8 years old. So playing drums at secondary school was different because it was like, what do you do? Mm. So they had a steel band, you know, like a Caribbean kind of.
Yeah.
We did like I Want to Break Free.
Amazing.
Like Under Pressure. It's weird shit.
Great. I mean, both Queen songs, but
it was great.
there was
an Elvis song in there. There was tons of stuff. It was fucking wicked. And everyone in that little group of friends were all just a ragtag little group of like weird misfits. That was it. And it was like a weird little
thing. Steel band society.
Where we'd all teach ourselves songs that weren't on the songbook and be weird little sort of like, I learned the bass line. Oh, what to? It's Mr. Brightside. And I'm like, isn't that like three notes? But yeah, anyway, so that was fun. Yeah, and it was cool, but it was like everyone did their own little thing. It was cool as fuck. Everyone got together. It was cool. Sit and we'd chat. Fucking nerd shit.
Amazing. Yeah.
And that was a lunch break. It was amazing.
See, I had to dump mine because I became very good friends with a little lad called Ralph.
Yeah.
And Ralph was quiet.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit larger.
Okay.
Really into Warhammer.
Yeah.
Chemistry. Yeah. And drawing.
Cool.
And we became like tight in year seven. But the bullying was bad. The bullying was pretty fucking bad. Because I was the poor kid and we were both gay. Because everyone in the 90s at school was gay.
Yeah.
Especially in my school. Like everyone, like that was...
I got my head put through a window once because apparently when I was out in the smoking area and I glanced the wrong way, I looked at someone gay and then he smacked my head into the window and it just shattered.
You looked at someone gay?
We got footed with a bill for that.
Amazing.
Because I broke a window and I'm like, I didn't break a window though. Objectively, very true statement.
Yeah.
Someone used my head as a fucking hammer to break the window. So you did break the window.
Right. Fair.
Sure.
Fair.
I'm glad to see that my school is full of lawyers.
I came into lunch once and Ralph was drawing the chemical structure of an element. And I was like, I think I'm beginning to see where I've gone wrong here.
Right.
Began to smoke, got in a band, and then kind of being the goth kid who was funny was my way of like not getting bullied as much because I had a tribe.
Right.
Still at that point as well where like emo hadn't happened yet, so the goth kids were strange and confusing rather than sad and pathetic.
Yeah, that's kind of what we got. It was like edgy.
It was slightly edgy.
Yeah.
So it's slightly edgier group of mates and was able to be funny. And then the bullying kind of went down. And I just left Ralph to his own devices.
Oh, dude.
But he now works at the LHC in CERN. Yeah, he does the fucking Large Hadron Collider.
Sick. So he's the one responsible for all the fucking the messed up timelines. And
Sick. He's the reason nothing's been right since 2019 when it got turned on. Yeah, mint.
So I can't relate to this film in many ways.
Right.
But the ways that I do is my little misfit group of friends, our poetry was music or film.
This was the
or
same.
Or theatre.
So, okay, okay, so we do see eye to eye. We had that group, and it was similar things, music. So, no, okay, we can relate, because we both found our music groups, and we were...
Yeah, I feel like everyone can relate to this movie in one way or another. It's a difficult delivery.
It is.
It's hard to digest if you're going at it to just watch a movie.
I think also it's like we're long past that 50s education style.
Yeah.
And
so
we're kind of seeing a system of oppression of schooling that I didn't really experience. I mean, my school was bad, but it wasn't as bad as what's depicted in the movie.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, it's radical view is the mainstream now. So I watch it and I'm like, this isn't radical. This is... It's very mild. It's telling some boys to enjoy poetry. That's their rebellion.
The thing that bothers me, right, is I get it from Mr. Keaton's view.
Mm-hmm.
Be a person, have dreams, enjoy art, live as free as you want to live, speak to women, write poetry, change your course of existence. At the end of the day, everyone is still sitting the same exam.
Yeah.
And we still do that today.
Yeah.
So I don't care about the revolutionary line of teaching.
Right.
If we're going to revolutionize teaching... I learn different the way that than you learn. Do you know what I mean? To revolutionize teaching would maybe be to recognize that and go, you don't learn as well by sitting and reading and repeating bullshit.
Right.
You have to do something and have something in your hands to go, oh, I now know how to do this.
Yeah.
That would be revolutionary. But to literally, it feels like, there's that cartoon that went around a while ago where it was like a monkey, an elephant, a mouse and a fish. And there was a teacher stood at the front of all four of them and went, climb the tree.
Right, yeah, yeah.
The exam
is to
climb the tree. Obviously, the monkey's going to be amazing at climbing the tree. Elephant, not so much.
Yeah.
Fish, not so much. Do you know what I mean? And
right.
It's that.
We got sorted into little Hogwarts houses at my school.
Oh, man, they did that at my first secondary school. It's so fucking pointless.
But what I loved about it was entirely arbitrary. And they could almost be like, right, visual learners, that's this house. People who need to be shown stuff, that's this house.
Yeah.
People who need to do it with their hands. But it's not. It's just like... You're named after this scientist.
Blue tie and green tie. There you go. Right. Go and enjoy your adversity.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Speaking of adversity, I mentioned in the cold open Tom Shulman.
Yes.
So they said, his agent was like, look, we're not selling this script. But fortunately, it made it into the hands of a guy called Stephen Haft.
Okay.
Stephen Haft was the producer on this movie.
Yeah.
Who was not only also a prep school boy, he was at prep school with the current chairman of Disney, Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Okay.
Which kind of helps things along.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, have you seen the movie Revenge of the Nerds?
Yes.
So Jeff Katzenberg greenlit the script.
Okay.
With Jeff Kanu, the director of Revenge of the Nerds, was going to direct, and they were going to cast Liam Neeson as the teacher.
Okay.
Mr. Keating.
Yeah.
Which is a bizarre, I'll carpe your fucking throat till I get my daughter back.
Yeah.
I can't see him doing it. Even young Liam Neeson, I can't see him doing it.
I would pay so much money to see that film.
Right?
I'd pay so much money to see that film because Robin Williams has got this really genuine caring streak through. And now whenever I see a Liam Neeson movie, it's like, I'm going to go fight the wolves.
Yeah.
I'm going to track down my daughter and kill her kidnappers.
Have you seen the Naked Gun remake?
Just for kids. No.
It's incredible.
Okay.
It's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
We should watch it together.
Okay.
I think that would bring me joy.
Okay.
It's so silly.
I like that, though.
It's the silliest film I've seen in years.
I'm a bit of a purist, though. I've still got Naked Gun 33 and a half
they
on
do
VHS
it right.
from when I was
they
a kid.
They do it right because they're not trying to be that. They're trying to be something new, but with the same attitude.
Yeah, it's a continuation of it, isn't it? It's kid.
But that itself is a joke.
Yeah.
Like it's very clearly, I mean, fortunately, we didn't get Liam Neeson as Mr. Keating.
We didn't.
He instead would later end up in the Dead Wife Society, but the studio wanted Robin Williams.
Okay.
Williams wouldn't commit to working with Jeff Kanu.
Right.
And despite that, Disney were like, let's just move ahead so that Robin Williams feels pressured into joining, because he's in talks.
Sure.
And he's going, I don't want to work with that director. I don't want to work with that director. So they just moved ahead with production.
Okay.
To the point where Shulman, the writer, the studio wanted Robin Williams and Robin wouldn't say no, but he wouldn't say yes to working with that director. In fact, we prepped the movie, built the sets.
Right.
It was going to be shot outside of Atlanta. And Robin just didn't show up for the first day of shooting. He never said he would, but Disney were trying to pressure him by moving forward. After the first day he didn't show up, they cancelled the production and burned the sets. We actually have dailies of the sets burning, which is not only an incredible story, but it makes me really feel for Jeff Kanu, the director of Revenge of the Nerds. He's got this big movie. It's going ahead. The cast is all set. They've built the sets. You're saying to the studio, have we got a lead actor? They're like, he'll turn up. He'll turn up. And then at a certain point, you stood there watching the sets burn down, just going,
hold on one second.
Robin Williams must really fucking hate me.
Yeah.
Robin Williams must think I'm a piece of fucking shit.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Sorry, I was just Googling whether Field of Dreams was a Disney movie. It's not, because they were trying to Field of Dreams it. Build it and they will come.
There we go.
They were just trying to Field of Dreams it. That's sick. I fucking love that Disney, one of the biggest corporations on the planet, followed Fields of Dreams.
I mean, it's an inspirational movie.
That's meant.
Right.
That makes me like Disney... One. Exactly one. I like Disney one.
So I want to introduce now the director that we're going to be talking about for the next couple of my episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find fascinating about him is he's directed 15 movies.
Okay.
All of
we're
them
doing
are...
15 movies?
No, we're doing three.
Okay.
We're doing three important movies to the story of this man.
Okay.
All of them are artistically sound, all 15. Some of them are all-time greats in their genre. But that's not to say he ever picked a genre. He's not like David Fincher. 40-year career, he directed drama movies, action movies, romance movies, mystery thrillers, comedy films. Films, by the way, that won 6 Oscars and were nominated for 29.
Fucking hell.
Now,
okay.
I know you know who I'm talking about because we've spoken about this series. But before I suggested bringing it, were you aware of the name Peter Weir?
Yes.
You were?
Yes.
How come?
Dead Poets Society.
Literally just
Dead Poets Society.
The number
it's
the of film-
only it's the only one where I'm like, if someone says Peter Weir, I'm like, Dead Poets Society.
Right.
What else did he do? Films. I'm pretty sure
he's done
films.
Shit loads. He did Witness with Harrison Ford.
Oh, okay.
Where he goes into the Amish community.
Yeah, yeah.
He did The Truman Show, which is the next film I'm bringing.
Yeah.
Master and Commander with Russell Crowe, which is the film I'm bringing after that because it's fucking
never seen
mint.
It.
Every film he does is great. He did a couple of Mel Gibson movies before Mel Gibson was, you know, went weird.
Yeah. Mel Gibson's always been kind of there.
Yeah, it was during the Mad Max era when Mel Gibson was cool.
Okay.
But he got the script from Katzenberg and
sick.
Immediately started fighting with Tom Shulman, the writer.
Okay.
But what's incredible is Shulman cannot speak highly enough of him.
Okay.
They started disagreeing about the plot line that didn't end up in the film.
Right.
Where Mr. Keating has lymphoma. He's got
cancer,
right?
So this is like a last-ditch effort to inspire the next generation because he has limited time on the earth.
Right.
That adds a different dynamic that
doesn't
I quite
it?
Like.
Right.
Yeah.
Shulman loved it too. It was like the crux of his story.
Yeah.
And they argued about it for weeks. Weir said, look, let me get over there. We'll hash it out.
Mm-hmm.
And in Shulman's own words, he said, well, I don't agree that this should be cut.
Okay.
And this is Peter Weir's response. I know you don't, and I don't expect you to. If you told me right now that you agree, I wouldn't have any respect for you. I know that you believe in this, so I'm coming over to the States in about 2 weeks and we'll get together and talk about it. This movie will be reviewed as a disease of the week kind of movie if this is left in. It'll be weepy. And this one notion will swallow everything else you've done in the movie. It'll be about a teacher who's dying. And that's different. I don't think that's what you want. It's easy for a bunch of boys to stand up, almost a courtesy for someone who's dying. But if he's not dying... then we know that they're standing up for what he's taught them, for what he believes in.
I like that a lot more.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's the film we
that
end
makes
up
perfect
with.
Sense.
But what I love about Peter Weir is throughout all of his films, there's absolutely not a shred of director signature. Peter Weir movies don't come across like a Peter Weir movie.
He's the Gary Oldman of directing.
He's the Gary Oldman of directing. Mm. He gets in and he collaborates with everybody. Shulman was asked to give suggestions for the direction.
Yeah.
And Shulman said, what if I screw it up? And Weir said, I'll fix it.
I love this.
Right?
I love this.
With the scene where Robin Williams is teaching Shakespeare.
Yes.
That only came about because Robin Williams was delivering the script exactly as written. And Weir was like, look, it's a bit wooden. You're coming across a bit wooden. You're doing like a drama actor thing.
Right.
So what he did was he booked a day of filming completely without Disney's oversight.
Yeah.
And then just went, right, we're improvising a scene. And that was where we got the Robin Williams doing all the different versions of Shakespeare by the different actors.
Right.
Which is also where we got the kids climbing up on the desk.
Amazing.
All of this because Weir was like, right, we're gonna work together as a team and it's our film, not my film.
Okay.
And this is something that comes up time and time again when you look at people who are working with him. He comes in, he goes, right, what does this story need? And what's everyone's ideas? To the degree where the poem but only in their dreams can men be truly free. 'Twas always thus and always thus will be.
Mm-hmm.
Was not written in the script. It was a poem written by Robin Williams Standin, who came up because he was like, anyone who's got any ideas, let them know. The only rule is don't be offended if we don't use it. So this incredibly collaborative, right, kind man who just comes in and goes, we're going to argue about stuff, but I would be worried if we didn't, because that would mean you didn't care. The fact we're arguing shows that you care about what we're doing. Let's all make a film together. And he's got a 40-year career, and he's never spoken about in the history of the greats.
I don't know him outside of Dead Poets Society.
Right.
Truman Show, I've seen countless times. Had on DVD since the second it came out on DVD. I've never once wondered
who directed it. Because there's no director stamp.
No.
It's just a film that exists. And
yeah,
I fucking love it. And that's why I want to spend a couple of episodes going through some of his movies.
Okay.
Because I think everyone has got some really interesting, healthy conflict.
I like this. I like this a lot. I've got something that's a little bit more in-universe.
Oh, okay.
The Dead Poets Society. Now, as long-term listeners will know, Rob watches films as an educational...
Yeah, like a gym, like an emotional
gym. It's a way to spend your time. I watch
Helps
films.
Me understand people.
There you go. I watch films to escape. It's my escapism.
Yeah.
So I like to disappear into the worlds that are set before me. A film will start up. It sets its own rules. It tells you as much about its world and its universe as it can. And then it sticks by the rules, hopefully. And if I'm invested in it, I can get behind it. Fuck it, I'm in it. I'm in that universe. I'm wondering about the fucking geopolitical situations that are happening. You know what I mean? This is the thing. Yeah. What implications does all this have on the rest of the world? I've got a theory about Dead Poets Society.
Right.
We've got the lead character that we sort of focus on, the lead kid.
Young Neil.
He wants to be an actor.
He does.
His dad, who is Red Foreman in That 70s Show.
Yes.
Very famously.
Robocop 2.
Yeah. Very famously. Not a fun person. It's like he was built for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's a villain guy.
Yeah. He's famously not a fun person. So I came up with a stupid little theory because I was looking at what Robert Sean Leonard did after this. And since my operation.
Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of House.
Okay.
I'm up to season 8 on House right now.
Nice.
I started at 1. So I'm up to season 8. And obviously Robert Sean Lennon plays James Wilson in that, which is amazing. So my theory is that when Neil got a bit sad and his dad's studying, he was like, he's not going to let me be an actor ever. He's never going to let me be an actor. Pulls his dad's gun out of the desk, tries to shoot himself, boof. And everyone's like, oh no, my boy. I don't think the suicide was successful.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think the suicide failed.
Okay.
I think the suicide failed. Coming round in hospital, had a medical problem.
Right.
That only one person could save.
Right, okay.
And it was a diagnostician who was like pulling everything out of the bag.
Right.
Committing medical crimes.
Yeah.
Walking with a limp.
Doing amphetamines permanently.
Being a bit weird.
Yeah.
Running around on painkillers.
Yeah.
But he got the job done.
So we're saying the actor, Robert Sean Leonard.
I'm saying the actor, Robert Sean Leonard.
Is the character
is
that he
Neil.
Plays.
Yeah, he's still in character.
Right, okay.
Because the suicide wasn't successful.
So it's stuck him in character.
In for the rest of time.
Right, okay.
And he's because of his
brain
illness that got saved when he was in hospital recovering from a failed suicide attempt.
He's got permanent methoditis.
And that one diagnostician that was just working tirelessly to get him up and on his feet, he's like... He gets shown the script for House and he's like, fucking, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in for this.
So we're saying House is a documentary.
Saying House is more, it's more like a
reality
TV. It's set
in
the same universe as Dead Poets Society.
Okay. Right.
I feel like those two are one and the same. Because if you look at James Wilson's office, he keeps talking about, oh, I bought the Ed Wood box set the other day. Should we talk about Bride of the Monster? And I'm like, that's not a horror movie for the masses.
You're saying this, I've never seen House.
Right, yeah, but I'm telling you.
Okay.
He buys an Ed Wood box set and talks about fucking Bride of the Monster. that's posh. That's posh school.
Okay.
That's posh school cinematics right there. He's got posters
B-movie's
on his walls.
B-movie's posh school.
That's not a B-movie. That's a creme de la creme.
Is it?
It's an up there one.
Ed Wood?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's one of Ed Wood operating on full cylinders.
On all of his one
that's
cylinder.
That's Art Wood. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's his lawnmower.
Exactly.
Going around the fucking Nürburgring.
Exactly. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So he's going for classy horror rather than like cheap, cheesy, schlocky horror.
Uh-huh.
And then the posters on his wall, they're sort of like cinematically charged.
Right.
So, should we say?
Yep.
So my theory is that Robert Sean Lennon is still Neil, just with an unsuccessful sort of thing.
I think that's fair. Yeah. I think that's fair.
Thanks.
It's
a fun way to live my life.
It's a fun way to live your life.
Yeah.
It's more fun than what Ethan Hawke has become.
What, Black Phone 2?
Don't, because because for all of my life, I've found Ethan Hawke in interview insufferable. One of the most pretentious men in interview I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He loves throwing out his acting theory. He loves throwing out his art references.
Yeah.
Like, he works with Richard Linklater a couple of times, and he's the most chin-strokey guy in the world.
Yeah.
And then he does a series of horror movies, Black Phone and Black Phone 2, and I'm like, none of that can be real. Like, nothing you've ever said is real, and you're in these movies.
I know.
Like, I was giving it, you know, with Nolan, Christopher Nolan, he's got a scarf, he's a pretentious tosser, but you're like, but he's doing the do.
But he's got a real streak in him, and that's what I love about
that.
I just hate his scarf.
Right, right.
I thought I hated Christopher Nolan.
It's just the scarf.
But I can, now, as a 36-year-old man, I'm willing to admit, I'm able to separate the man from the scarf.
You got to separate the art from the scarfist.
You got to do, man. That's what I'm saying.
Here's what I find interesting about Dead Poets Society.
Yeah.
I think it's not his fault, but I think Mr. Keating is a really irresponsible teacher.
I don't think he's a teacher.
This is right.
I don't...
Some of the shit he gets up to with the kids...
it's just weird.
...is borderline grooming.
It's odd.
It's odd.
It's odd.
Right, we're all going to do something naughty together and this will be our secret.
Mm-hmm.
Let's all rip pages out of our books, but don't tell the authorities. Mm-hmm. Oh, we used to go into the woods and read poetry in a little cave. I'll tell you where it is.
And my boys, we were alive.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then in his very first lesson, Mr. Keating says, law, medicine, business, they're all noble pursuits, but arts like poetry are what makes life worth living.
Right.
He then sets up the expectation of carpe diem. Time is short.
Yeah.
So when Neil's dad tells him he can't be an actor, he can't do the arts, he has to do law or medicine or business.
Yeah, yeah.
What's worth living for?
Yeah.
He kind of sets this, you've got a limited time, do what you have to do, do what you want to do, don't listen to anyone else. The fact that your family have worked for generations to put you in a position this privileged, like Neil's family are not.
There's a lot
they're bastards.
There's a lot of, like, you know when I keep calling him Red Foreman, when Neil's dad shows up to his play and he sees him doing his business, doing his Shakespeare, and he's like, you know what, he's a good actor.
Yeah.
I didn't work my fingers to the fucking bone to pay for this school,
mm-hmm.
an opportunity that I did not have access to.
It's that.
For him to be a fucking playwright.
Right.
Like, and then, to be jumping about a stage as a nymph.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then you've got Mr. Keating being like, don't tell anyone.
Yeah, he pulls his mate back and he's like, don't make it any worse than it already is. And I'm like, you did that.
Yeah.
You made it worse than it already was.
This is my point.
Why are you telling that kid not to?
Right.
The fact that this evening, whatever happens from this evening, is a direct result of your meddling for the last however many weeks and months. That you doing the nobleman thing of don't make it worse than it already is. What do you mean?
I'm saying there's some safeguarding failures at this school around Mr. Keating.
It's 59. I'm saying there was a few in that era, bud. I think there was a few, to be honest.
And I wonder if Neil hadn't killed himself.
I don't think he did. Attempted to.
Okay, if Neil hadn't attempted suicide.
Thank you.
what would have been the third act of this film? If this is acts one and two, and Neil doesn't kill himself, you can't tell me that act three of this film doesn't end up with someone with Robin Williams' cock in their mouth.
Or, hear me out now, the only way that it could work is that Red Foreman, I keep calling him Red Foreman has a change of heart, lets Neil do the acting, and then it turns out that Robin Williams, Mr. Keating, has cancer.
That's what it would be.
Which can only be solved by one diagnostician.
I'm not saying it's his fault.
Okay.
I'm saying something shady was going on. And I'm saying that little look he gives back into the classroom is less one of triumph and more one of, nearly had one of them.
Nearly had one of them.
Nearly had one of them. It's a predator's regret. It's a regretful look on the face of a predator going.
It's the 12 that got away.
Exactly.
Fuck's sake. Okay.
Because I don't understand, especially in the 1950s, what an adult man
right
is doing with boys of that age.
Teaching them.
Not in the fifth. That's not how
he's a
teach
poet.
In the 50s.
He's a maverick. He's a fucking. He's living a groomer. Life by the he's about to go into the 60s.
Uh huh.
This is where free loving and shit came from.
From teenagers. Teenagers in the 60s.
That were inspired by people who grew up in a stricter than life, stricter mm-hmm. than thou environment.
And that as a reaction
to only one diagnostician being available to solve all the medical mysteries.
What do you think Dead Poets Society really means?
To be honest with you, this I think this comes from like too much of a personal sway than anything else. I think it's the failing of the school system. It shows the detriment of the educational system for how it was.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in the 80s going, God, look at how brutal this was. Isn't this mad? And now that we're in, when we were going through school in like the early 2000s, it was not that different. It was still the exact same thing, still same exam processing and all this, that and the other. I just think it's the same shit with a different shirt and tie on just being perpetually pushed through.
Yeah.
And we're all subjected to the same things, so that we're all nice and neat little factory workers that can go and do the machine operating and do this, all that and the other. Consume enough, spend yep. enough, earn just enough to keep yourself above water so mm-hmm. the government doesn't have to bail you out.
So you can continue consuming.
Continue doing what we need you to yeah. do. And it just fucks me off. And then you've got this film that comes through and it shows you the other side of that, from where it's like old money
mm-hmm.
and it shows you the exact same educational system.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't matter your societal standing, everyone has a very similar experience. Everyone has one teacher that hits them more than anything mm-hmm. else. For me personally, it was Miss Glynn. Miss Glynn was my English teacher.
Not Miss Cochrane.
Miss Cochrane was my tutor. She was a French teacher. I can't speak a word of French. It's not an accident.
But she is responsible for 100% of your sexual encounters.
No. What?
Older lady bullied you.
I thought you meant that I'd fucked my school tutor in school.
I'm not saying that you did literally. I'm saying figuratively. Since you left
that's
school,
a weird trophy
that's
to give
all
your,
you've been trying
your,
to do.
High school. I got worried then because you jumped to that too quick, and you've literally been sitting here being sort of like, "I went to a private boys' school," and I'm like, "Did you get Mr. Keaton?"
There was one.
Right. Okay.
He got fired.
Yeah.
Because.
So I've got Miss Glynn. Miss Glynn was that inspirational teacher that would just. It wasn't even a case of you have to do this for your future mm-hmm. and all this, that, and the other. It was, I don't care whether this matters to you in a year. You just need to do this so that you can go yeah. to college and do your freedom and do your experience. Yeah. If you want to go to college and do music, you go and do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go to college and do film, go and do that. But to get you there,
mm-hmm.
you need to understand Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And at the moment, you can't tell me shit about it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to teach you it. You're going to regurgitate it into yeah. an exam paper. They're going to go, he gets this, tick it. You're going to go to college. You're going to find yourself. It's going to be mint. And I'm like,
great.
And that was it. And she was the most straightforward, honest,
mm-hmm.
brutal teacher in the ways it was just sort of like, she'd cut through the shit. She didn't care yeah. that you were passing notes. She didn't care that you were fucking around in this, that, and the other. Just at the end of class, just be sort of like, your exam's in 6 months. I know what's on the paper. Do you? And I'm like, no. But at that time, you're like, 6 months. That's fucking years away, miss. And she's like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's two lessons a week. 4 weeks in a month. There you go. Do the math.
Nice.
You might not be able to.
I was going to say.
That's the thing.
Because I couldn't. Right. I was just like, that's like 16.
But this is on the
lessons.
Way out of a class.
Yeah.
And she's mint for it. Because the second you walk back in, she'd be sort of like, so where you at?
Mm.
Like, all right, I read it. I'm reading it. I'm working through it. It's fucking hard. And she's like, it is.
Mm.
This is why I'm here. I get paid to do this. This is what it is. She was mint. So I think the whole thing here is it hits me in a way where it doesn't matter your societal standing. It gives everybody a human experience. It gives everyone, because it's an American film as well, but we can still relate to it being British. It's an insight into something that is so universal and so ultimately pencil pushery that Mr. Keaton arrives and tries to push the freedom and the expression and the be a person now a little bit too soon because he may have missed the boat on whatever it is. The underlying lesson being, know your moment.
Yeah.
Play the cards you've been dealt and just get to where you need to get to the next step.
Nice.
Plan out your next thing, do the next thing, do X, Y, and Z. Don't Mr. Keaton it because one of your mates will shoot himself in the head.
See, weirdly, mine's almost the same, but it's nothing to do with the content of the movie.
Okay.
It's everything to do with the way it was made.
Okay.
And I think Peter Weir has had successes. He's had critical successes. before this moment, but everything about this movie, which was a huge success,
yeah,
and went on to become a cultural touchstone for America and people in the West generally. Like, yeah, this was a massive cultural moment, made money hand over fist, and was nominated for 4 Oscars.
Still referenced today.
Still referenced today.
Yeah.
And it, so many of the moments that make it that film are not his ideas. It's that collaborative process of, I don't necessarily know what's best. Let's all talk about it together and do something that we can all be proud of.
I like that.
Which is touched on in the film.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think is better developed in some of his later movies.
Okay.
And I think it's a wonderful thing that he's been working as a director at this point for some time.
Yeah, yeah.
And just that collaborative attitude of, if you're at a point in your life and you're stuck, it's not even about asking for help. It's about doing something together that you both want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I feel like is exactly how this podcast started.
Yeah.
I came on to help you and another host, and then that didn't work out.
Host is a strong word.
For many reasons, that didn't work out. It's going to be like, well, let's not get into why that didn't work out. sounding board.
Sure.
Wall.
Sure.
And then it was like, look, what do we want to do? Let's work at it together. I think recently we've kind of looked at what we're doing and how we want to do it differently and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, little
tweaks. But having it be, I don't think I've got 100% the best ideas. You don't think you've got 100% the best ideas.
Oh,
we come to it together and we go, would this be fun?
Yeah.
And that's what Peter Weir did with this. And to see it rewarded gives me a lot of hope.
I do like it. I love this film. I love it. I genuinely do. Thanks for bringing it to the table. I haven't seen it since I was much younger. Much younger, Ben saw this and it was a different film. Different film.
Yeah. I watched it for the first time for this show.
Yeah.
And
it's an odd one going
bounced
back
off
to
me.
It's a difficult one to watch if you're just looking for a movie.
Yeah.
It's a slow burn, real slow burn, but it has to be to get the points across to where you need them to be.
Well, just before we give you all our final, definitive, controversial, all-time rating of this film, which is obviously, I mean, people listen to this show to discover whether or not film's good or not. We're kind of more respected than Mark Kermode or IMDb.
He's trying.
You know, yeah. And God loves a trier.
Okay,
before we get to that rating, which is obviously going to determine the future of this film in culture, should we see what people on the internet have been saying about us?
Hit me.
Well, we recently posted a little thing about time loop movies, asking people, you know, what time loop movies do you do?
Yeah.
We've had some really good suggestions from some people with great names. So Big Weed reckons Happy Death Day might be a bad movie.
Happy Death Day is good. Happy Death Day 2 isn't great.
Right. I've not seen either of them in
first one's
news
really
that
good.
Shock no one.
The first one's good on its own, but then I think with the existence of the second one.
Right. Does it retroactively ruin the first
one? Gladiator 2.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Put it this way. If I could only watch one film this week, would it be Happy Death? Would you recommend Happy Death? Well, there we go.
Fuck no.
Right. Because most people have only got time.
I'd tell you to watch Revenge of the Nerds before that.
Right. Okay.
You know what I mean?
And Robin Williams famously hated that. He'd rather watch an entire film set burn to the ground than work with the director of Revenge of the Nerds.
So upsetting.
Andy B, 1990, friend of ours. Got into Predestination.
Predestination?
I don't think I've seen that.
Fairly recent. It's about 10 years ago.
Okay, because we're at that age where 10 years ago is fairly recent.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Yeah. It's not, yeah. Kind of. I haven't seen it since around the time it came out, so okay. Maybe. Also, Predestination is fucking hilarious. Where I hung out with a few friends last night watching Twilight.
Right.
And someone just off the cuff mentioned about... we're talking about the vampire powers and how silly they are and sort of all the weird ones that you could go. And someone just shouted out, Recog?
Right. Do you mean like...
Like a precog.
Like from Minority Report.
Minority Report, you know, the three people.
Remembering things
that
haven't happened yet.
Yeah.
But recog is just remembering.
Just remembering things. So it's just someone that is employed to remember things. And then I spent last night mainly thinking stuff like, if I lose my keys, and I'm like, I fucking swear I put them here. And I'm like, recog, where are my keys? And they're like, you think you've left them on the table? I'm like, I do.
Yeah.
I'm like, silly you. bedside cabinet, and I'm like, Ricard,
unironically,
you've done it again.
Unironically, before we recorded this, I spent 10 minutes looking for the power supply for the
fucking
audio.
I know, and I couldn't
help
you, because I don't know what the fuck this cable looks like.
Right.
How many episodes have we recorded here? I don't know what that power is at. I just show up and it's there. I don't know what that is. There's a blue thing. I don't know whether that's what you're looking for, but if I was to jump in and help you, I'd have been like, is this it? You'd have stopped what you were doing and gone, no. I'd have pulled another one out of the same box, and you'd have gone,
no.
No.
Yeah.
I'm going to carry on looking here. Oh, yeah, but is this it? You'd have stopped. Ben, no.
Right.
See what I mean?
Right.
Recog.
Recog would have been really handy.
I think it was Alex that did that.
Crywank Carousel.
Great name.
Got in touch to say Butterfly Effect.
Oh, that's a... Yeah, okay.
Is it good? Or is it just cast well?
I don't think it's a good film, but I haven't seen it since it came out. And didn't it come out in like 2004?
It came out around about 2004, and what annoyed me about it is I watched it at the time.
Right.
Thought it was shit. And then it became this social phenomena where everybody was...
I know where this story's going already.
Just saying, it's fucking mint. And I'm like, it's not, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not. And you know when everybody's wrong?
Yeah.
Everybody's wrong. Yeah, and you're like, shut the fuck up about the Butterfly Effect. So I could rewatch it now and it would probably be a solid 6 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
But the impact it's had on my life, I'm like, fuck it. Fuck it to death.
Yeah.
I wish it had never been made.
Fuck it. The amount of times I've pretended to like the Butterfly Effect just to get laid.
Right, exactly. It's that.
You reach a point in your life where you either have to choose to have a vain interest in astrology or never get laid again.
The Butterfly Effect is the incubus of movies.
Fuck you. Incubus were great.
No,
up
they
until
weren't.
Megalomaniac, they were great. Megalomaniac wasn't that bad. After that, terrible.
You should listen to the mix on, is it Six, the album that they had mixed by Skrillex?
I don't care. That's after it. That's after it.
I'll play it to you in a minute.
No, it's way after it, man.
That's Comment Corner, gang. And we would hope it's obvious how you can get involved. Maybe hear us dive into your thoughts about the movies we're covering.
Let us know whether you like Incubus. Everymovieeveruk@gmail.com.
I had an Incubus t-shirt and it was just so I could get laid.
You're the worst. You're why Incubus were failing.
Yeah. Because
they were trusting their audience too much and they were full of slags.
Yes. Yeah. There's nothing worse than a slag except an unrequited slag, which is what I was.
Yeah.
I was available to everyone.
You're a wolf
and
slags
chosen
clothing.
By no one.
All right.
That's it. That's the end of the show.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us, guys. It's been fucking amazing. We love you all dearly from the bottom of our hearts. Please reach out. Please tell your mates about us. Next week, I don't know what film we're doing next week. Stop asking. Stop pressuring me. I'm doing something, all right? I'm working on something.
I can say in the coming weeks, we're going to do The Truman Show.
Yeah, that's not next week.
That's not next week.
It'll be the week after.
And then not the week after that, but the week after that, we're going to do Master and Commander, both of which Peter Weir movies. I recommend people get and watched. You're not going to regret it.
Yeah.
And if you do regret it, you can...
Tough shit.
You know what I mean? Art's
subjective.
Right, exactly.
Who are you going to blame?
Right.
Blame the slags in the fucking Peter Weir t-shirts that don't really like him. Because that's who's swaying it. You know what I mean? That's who's swaying it.
Now, to thank you for spending your time with us.
No, I'm not. I've just done it. That's it. I've just done
it.
Yeah, just edit a consume over that. I'm going to be like, slags and t-shirts are ruining stuff that you like. That's the takeaway. That's the Monday takeaway. Listen. If you think, maybe if I learn what a Virgo is, I might get laid. It's objectively funny. That's a very funny like line of thought. It's not objectively true, because that's mental. If you're like, Incubus fans are getting laid, they're not.
That was my problem.